I might just make sort of, I don't usually do this, but I might make a sort of an editorial comment on something that was brought out in the prayer. And it's very common to mention, you know, asking God's blessing on Mr. Tkach as the pastor general of the church and the human leader of the work. And that's good, but let's, when we hear that, let's just not expect to hear it and just take it for granted, because there's a danger, because it's used so often that we can. It almost becomes expected, as I say, and so it doesn't really have a full impact on our brains. Because down through time, if you read in the scriptures especially, those who were called upon by God to be the human leaders of God's people have found it a heavy burden to carry. Moses probably commenting more in more places, because we have more of the material dealing with Moses' period of leadership than almost any other leader, commenting on how difficult it was and how much he would have liked to have given off that burden to somebody else. And even Jeremiah, there's a very beautiful little passage where he sort of wails on God's shoulder, so to speak, about the burden. And of course, Elijah needed to be restored by being brought to Mount Sinai, because he was so depressed by the responsibilities he had to carry. And at that time, of course, what he perceived as a lack of response from the people. That it is a tremendous burden. And it's more than really it is fair to ask any human being to assume. But of course, God needs to have a human leader to serve at the head of his work. And the mantle fell on Mr. Tkach. It's not something he actively sought. But we need to be solicitous with, you know, very heartfelt feelings for asking for God's guidance, not only his guidance, but an insight, but also for just to support and hold him up emotionally and every other way, so that he can continue to carry that burden, which is a considerable one. And as we go along in time, will become even greater the longer he's in the office. So I just wanted to make that brief comment. Okay, today I wanted to sort of back up and take some time to discuss this matter of the identity of Darius the Mede. One of the claims of modern critical scholars, of course, beginning in the 19th century, was that no such figure was known to history. And this is indeed true. There is no one in the Persian or Median records that we find by that specific name. And I mentioned in the material I gave you in the handout that as modern critical scholars, rather as traditionalists or conservative scholars have noted, it is possible to associate him with an historical personality. And actually, the reason I worded it in that vague fashion is because there's no one school of thought as to who that personality should be. But a reasonable claim, I think, could be made to associate it with the general who served as the actual conqueror of Babylon on behalf of Cyrus, whose name is spelled in various ways, but frequently will appear in the literature as Gubaru, an otherwise unknown individual who appears only in a few texts as the one who literally was at the head of the forces that occupied Babylon and briefly was there prior to Cyrus's triumphal entry into the city. And I have no, well, I wouldn't say I have a major quarrel with that. I have some minor quarrels with that identification. And again, it's not something that's a matter of doctrine of the church or something where we can be dogmatic, I think, at this point, unless more evidence were to come to light. But I feel a much better historical identification could be made to identify Darius the Mede. And this may seem strange if you haven't heard this before, and there may be some people in the class who have heard me declaim on this before and know where I'm going. But I am of the opinion, until I am persuaded by facts otherwise, that Darius the Mede was Cyrus. That it's the same person. That it's simply another name. Now, why do I say that the two men are identical? It's not my own thing I've dreamed up and researched and so on. I was very heavily influenced by an article that I read, which you could read yourself if you wish, and get all the details and be able to study it at your leisure and decide whether you're persuaded or not, and to what degree you might be persuaded. The title of it is called The Identity of Darius the Mede. It appeared in the Westminster Theological Journal Westminster Theological Journal in the spring of 1974. In other words, it's a quarterly, and it was the spring issue of 1974. And we did have it in our library. Though why, I don't know. It's in some sort of reserve stack piled away in some obscure place. But they will fish it out for you if you ask specifically. In fact, is there anybody who works? You work in the library. Maybe you could get them to pull it out from wherever they're hiding it and put it on reserve for a while. That way, if anybody in the class particularly would like to get at it, they could get at it a lot easier and then Xerox their own personal copy after having read it, if you feel it's something you want to have for the future. Now, why was I convinced by the main points of this article? Well, there are a lot of interesting, if you want to call them, coincidences about what is given, about information provided about Darius the Mede, that match up with Cyrus. In other words, is it a coincidence that a number of things that we know to be true of Darius are also true of Cyrus? Or does that coincidence then become something more than coincidence? You follow what I mean? That if somebody describes a person that they're this tall, this coloration, this color eyes, this color hair, these are their favorite hobbies, this is where he went to school and got his degrees, this is where he grew up, this is what profession he follows, and then somebody else describes somebody by another name with the same descriptions, you begin to wonder if it might be the same person, though known by a different name by the two people. Now, what are some of these coincidences? Well, you might want to put these down in a chart form with the characteristics of Darius on one side and the characteristics of Cyrus on the other. Yes?
I have a
well, that's one of the things we'll cover. Okay. Yes? Oh, thank you much, Lee. Yes, Drew will get angry with me. Here she just says. I wonder in what variations you're going to hear about this today. Under Darius the Mede, the following information is known. That he conquered Babylon. He is mentioned in Daniel chapter 5, verse 31, as the one who is at least credited with having conquered Babylon. Remember that the ancient history texts that have survived credit Cyrus with the conquest, even though Cyrus was not physically present. And so maybe the biblical text in mentioning him as the conqueror of Babylon does not require his physical presence on the scene any more than the historical texts require Cyrus's presence on the scene. For instance, in Daniel 5:31, we find it mentioned, well, backing up to verse 30, in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom. You see, this is what we know about him. We also know in chapter 6, verse 1, it says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first. In other words, you had sort of an administrative bureaucracy consisting of 120 princes, and over them was a group of men to coordinate all their activities who were called presidents, and the one who was the senior president of them all was Daniel. In other words, it says in the text that Darius organized the administration of the kingdom of Babylon after he conquered it. Point number three, in Daniel 5, get this thing straight in my mind. Yeah. Daniel 5, verse 28. This is, of course, Daniel's interpretation of the handwriting on the wall. In Daniel 5, 28, where he came to the word Perez, he said, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. In other words, the Babylonian kingdom did not come to a screeching halt and go out of existence when it was conquered. The kingdom of Babylon continued, but it had a new ruler. Instead of Belshazzar, who was a Chaldean or a Babylonian, it now had a foreigner as king of Babylon. The fact that the kingdom did not go out of existence is, of course, brought out by verse 31 again, that Darius the Median took the kingdom. In other words, he took possession of the kingdom, became its new ruler. And then in verse 1 of chapter 6, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom. In other words, we're still talking about the same kingdom. So this point is that Darius immediately became the ruler upon the conquest of Babylon. This is what this is bringing out, these verses beginning in 28, 30, 31, and verse 1 of chapter 6, is Darius became the first ruler at Babylon following its conquest. You see. This is what it's telling us here in the scripture. Even chapter 9, verse 1, talking about Darius, it says, who is made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. You see, the realm continues. It just has acquired a new ruler. This is another scripture that ties that particular point down. Okay, point number 4 is we find in Daniel chapter 6 the incident, and maybe I shouldn't use the word incident as if it was a minor thing. I'm sure Daniel looked upon it as anything but minor. Of Daniel being thrown in the den of lions because he broke Darius's decree. Darius had been sort of, induced to pass a decree that no one could pray to any other deity during this 30-day period. That all prayers offered during that 30-day period had to be offered to him and him alone, as if he was a god. And anyone who prayed to any other god during this 30-day period would be thrown in the den of lions. This is what is mentioned here in chapter 6 of Daniel. So if you want to summarize it more shortly, you can say that point 4 is that Darius ordered everyone to worship only him for 30 days. That's in Daniel 6, verses 7 through 9. He realized later he'd been very foolish, and he'd let flattery turn his head to doing something that would end up in hurting his very close friend and best assistant. Now, one other thing that might be mentioned here in point number 5 is the age of Darius the Mede when he took possession of Babylon. It says in Daniel 5, verse 31, that he was about 62 years of age when he took the kingdom, which would make him about 62 years old. He was about 62 years old when he became king at Babylon. Now, on the other column, with what do we know about Cyrus? Now, the material that we have to bring out about Cyrus is not material that is in the scriptures. It's material that comes from outside sources. One, we mentioned with Darius that Darius is the one credited with conquering Babylon in the book of Daniel. Historical sources ascribe the credit for the conquest of Babylon to Cyrus. Now, by itself, that may not be too indicative, but we have to go further. Secular sources say that following the conquest of Babylon, it was Cyrus who organized the administration of the Babylonian realm. That it was Cyrus who organized the administration of the Babylonian realm. And we've already noticed that the book of Daniel claims it was done by Darius. See? Now, that doesn't necessarily represent a contradiction, even if the two men are not the same, because it is theoretically possible, as you think you'd be quick to recognize, that Cyrus might have been credited with the organization, but it might have been delegated to somebody else. So it doesn't yet tie it down. In the same way that Cyrus may have been credited with the conquest of Babylon, and it may have been done by Darius, you see. We've just mentioned the two interesting coincidences so far, but they will get a bit stronger. Cyrus dates his reign as king of Babylon from the time of its conquest, 539 B.C. So Cyrus claims to have been king of Babylon from the moment of its conquest. If that's the case, where is there a room for a kingship by another person, even if it was by delegation for a period of time? It doesn't seem to allow for that, unless the two men are the same person. Next. I don't know if this specifically answers this question. Let me just take a quick look at it. 2 Chronicles 36. I looked at this last night in reviewing for the class, but I just can't remember now whether it really meant this point. No, it's addressing another point. Okay. Point number... Let's see. Which one are we up to now? Four. According to a Roman historian, Cyrus was the first Medo-Persian ruler to be worshipped by his subjects, to command his subjects to worship him. Cyrus was the first Medo-Persian ruler to command his subjects to worship him. And yet the book of Daniel claims that at least in the province of Babylon, the realm of Babylon, Darius insisted that he be worshipped. And I might raise another question here for you to consider. If Darius was simply a person ruling Babylon on behalf of his boss, Cyrus, in other words, in the name of Cyrus, but actually doing the work, do you think he would have been induced successfully to order the people of Babylon, the newly conquered kingdom, to worship him personally as divine when similar worship was not being offered to his boss? Does that sound like what a subordinate would dare to do? You know, the boss owns several kingdoms. He says, well, I'm very busy right now. I want you to rule this kingdom on my behalf in my name. You know, do you think that subordinate would have himself worshipped by those newly conquered people and not have his boss worship? And I say that seems to be a little bit odd behavior. It might get across the message to the boss that he's trying to take it as his own kingdom and keep it as his own as an independent ruler rather than being a faithful servant. Yes.
I was wondering, you were mentioning
That's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that. That's true, because if he hadn't been the emperor, why would it have been an irrevocable decree? You're right. That's another point that makes it stronger. Yeah, good. See, that's what I meant. Good illustration of that. Never occurred to me to think about that before. Yes. Yeah, but only when the emperor made a decision. A lower-ranking official could be reversed by the emperor at any time, you see. And of course, not all decrees of the emperor were of that kind. If the emperor could choose to make a decree of that severity by saying that let it be done according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, in other words, this is my irrevocable decision, you see. He didn't have to make every decision on that level. But he was apparently induced to make it at that level where it was irreversible. That's why remember we read about Artaxerxes telling them to stop building the wall? He didn't make it an irrevocable decree. He purposely worded it in such a way to leave himself the opportunity to reverse himself later. He said, let the wall not be built until another command comes from me. You know, he built that in, you see, making it a conditional command. Okay, that's point number four. Point number five. We have evidence from the writings of Cicero, the Roman, that Cyrus, in the year Babylon was conquered, was 62 years old, just about. approximately. Now, as I say, that's another interesting thing. If Darius was simply a subordinate, then we have a very interesting coincidence that the subordinate was the same age as the master, which again begins to sort of begin to beg, you know, can you stretch coincidences that far? You see, we're starting to build a chain of circumstances, you see, in this regard. Okay. Other things that could be adduced to support the identification that Darius the Mede is the same person as Cyrus the Persian. Initially, you would say, well, wait a minute. Why does Daniel call him Cyrus in some passages and call him Darius in other passages? Why not just call him Cyrus? I mean, why bother with a name that has led to perplexity among people, you know, for many hundred years, especially in this recent period? Why introduce that? Well, if it had occurred in any other book, we might think it particularly strange. But why is it not particularly strange in the book of Daniel? Why is it sort of almost the norm? Yes, Connie. Yeah, Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah are called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel was called Daniel in certain places and Belteshazzar in other places, sometimes even in the same chapter. Both names are used. It's a book that seems to abound in calling people by more than one name. Oh, that's great as a general principle. But we know that Daniel was given a new name in Babylon. We know that his friends were given new names in Babylon. Why should Cyrus have more than one name? Why should he be, being a Persian, should he be called Darius the Mede? Sure, it's the Medo-Persian Empire, but why should he be called a Mede if he was a Persian? And why should he have an extra name? Well, this is interesting about Cyrus, is that Cyrus was, at least in the Greek historians, he is always called Cyrus the Persian. This is the way Greek historians always referred to him. Why? Because his father was a Persian. He was the king of Persia. But what is interesting is who his mother was. His mother was the daughter of the king of the Medes. In other words, he had both royal lines in his blood. Now, from the Greek way of reckoning things, they reckon things according to the father. So naturally, he is always described as Cyrus the Persian. But in the Jewish way of reckoning in this time period, to whom did they reckon the children? Father or mother? Well, how do we know they reckoned according to the mother? What scriptural evidence from this period, the Persian period, gives evidence that they reckoned from the mother? You're right, but what gives evidence? Yes, later. Right. Because the children were not reckoned with the fathers. They were considered of the mother. You see, that's good evidence for that, and there seems to be other evidence, at least there's a fairly good agreement among Jewish scholars that's true. They reckoned it after the mother beginning in this period. And then, of course, there were reversals later on, adopting Roman usage in the Roman period of, again, the fathers, and then in the Middle Ages, they went back to the mother again, and that's where it stands today, that it's reckoned according to the mother. That's why to be born a Jew today, you have to have a Jewish mother. It's immaterial what your father was. You have to be able to point to a Jewish mother. And if your mother's not Jewish, then you have to be converted if you want to be a Jew. And if you were brought up as a Jew, you have to be converted. So he was, literally, although from the Greek point of view he was a Persian, it would not be surprising for a Jewish writer in the Persian period to reckon him as also being a Mede. Now, adding to this thing is the fact that Cyrus himself called himself King of the Medes. We have one of his inscriptions from the period of, I think it was 540-something. I can't remember the other number that comes. I'm sorry, it's not written down. 540, I'll put it X, B.C. We have an inscription of Cyrus that where he styles himself king of the Medes. He calls himself a Median king, not a Persian king. In the chronicle of the Babylonian Chronicle, which is a major cuneiform document, which has been a marvelous resource for reconstructing the period of Babylon and into the just before its fall, of course, up to its fall. It's in this Babylonian Chronicle, this cuneiform material, that we found mentions, for example, of Jehoiachin in Babylon and the rations that were being provided for him and his family, thus proving his presence in Babylon. And the fact also there's a document in part of the Babylonian Chronicle that mentions how the king who is called in the Bible, Evil-Merodach, released him from a more rigorous kind of confinement and placed him among all the sort of royal hostages in his court and made him sort of an honorable hostage and sort of improved his living circumstances, which is what the Bible tells us too, is that later he was lifted up. So we found a number of interesting confirmations in this Babylonian Chronicle. This Babylonian Chronicle also says that Cyrus bore the title King of the Medes, that he was considered, at least in his day, a Median as well as being considered a Persian. Herodotus, the Greek historian Herodotus, adds a very interesting and unfortunately not complete little detail. And Herodotus states in his history that Cyrus had a Median name. But in other words, he didn't just function under his Persian name of Cyrus, but he had a Median name. Unfortunately, it would be so great if he would have told us what the name was. We could either resolve this yay or nay on that basis maybe alone. But he doesn't. He just sort of comments on it offhandedly that Cyrus also had a Median royal name that was different from Cyrus. It's interesting in this connection that if we look at the way Darius is described, Darius the Mede, is described in the book of Daniel. This is a King James. Daniel chapter 9, verse 1. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes. That's an interesting little phrase. It seems to introduce an interesting thought. Of the seed of the Medes, rather than just being the Medes, period. Which would be an interesting way of describing somebody who was descended from the Medes from his mother, but whose father was something other, you see. This has been mentioned also. Another factor in this particular thing, though I think a weaker matter in trying to establish this, is that in Daniel 9:1, Daniel is shown in Daniel 9:2, that in the first year of his reign, first year of Darius's reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of years whereof the word of the Eternal came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. And I set my face to the Eternal God to seek by prayer and supplication with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. I prayed to the Eternal my God and made my confession. And he confesses the sinfulness of the people and asking God to be righteous to them and restore them to Jerusalem. And when he finishes his prayer, notice what happens. Verse 21. Yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked to me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to giving... No, that's not the passage I want. No. That's something else. Wait a minute. What? I've got a confused reference here. I'm thinking of Michael, the archangel Michael, who also comes to him. This is Gabriel's answer. That's right. This is the spot. Okay. At the beginning of your supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show you, for you are greatly beloved. So in other words, when Daniel started praying, the decision was made by God right then to do something about it. Now, if we continue down into chapter 10, Gabriel says something about, in verse 13, the prince of the kingdom of Persia, who we understand to be a demon, who is, you know, responsible for the oversight of that particular empire, withstood 1 and 20 days, but lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now, I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now, let's put this together. What does this mean? He says, I understood by studying Jeremiah it would be so many years. Those years are now up. I'm asking you, God, and I know we're a sinful people, but remember your faithfulness and your promise and do something that will permit this word to be fulfilled. Now, he's asking this request in the first year of Darius. Now, there is a short delay because a demon has been influencing the ruler of Persia, you see. And Gabriel and Michael together managed to get rid of that demon, and then Gabriel remains with the prince of Persia. Why? Obviously to carry out God's commands in influencing him. Now, what is Daniel asking about? He's asking about a decree to be granted so the Jews can go back and rebuild the temple and resettle and rebuild Jerusalem. Now, who issued that decree? It was Cyrus. And he issued it in what year of his reign? What does it say in the book of Ezra? First year. Isn't it interesting that it's in the first year of Darius that Daniel prays for the fulfillment of the promise, and Gabriel says, from the moment you started praying, the commandment went out from God, let's do it. And there was a short period of 21 days delay until the demon that was working closely, influencing the mind of the king of Persia, had to be gotten rid of, and then Gabriel remained to carry out that commandment. And as it says in Ezra, that God stirred up the spirit of Cyrus to issue the decree. In other words, it's not some brilliant idea he thought of, you see. So putting it together, what do we get? In the first year of Darius, Daniel starts to pray for this fulfillment of the return to Jerusalem, the rebuilding of the temple, the rebuilding of Jerusalem. And for a period of 21 days, there's no answer because Gabriel is busy helping Michael get rid of this demon who is, you know, affecting the mind of the prince, the king of Persia. And when he is gotten rid of, Gabriel remains, and we put that together with Ezra chapter 1, that in the first year of Cyrus, God stirred up the spirit of Cyrus to issue the decree of the return. Now, it seems we're talking about the same time period. So if the first year of Cyrus is the first year of Darius, there's a good chance the two men are the same. Now, one last thing that I will mention in this regard, and that is, even if there are two alternate names, as Herodotus says that Cyrus also had a Median name, there seems to be one scriptural problem in this association. And that is one verse which needs an explanation. Daniel 6, verse 28. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Oh, that looks bad. Does it? Does it? Consider 1 Chronicles, chapter 5, verse 26. 1 Chronicles, chapter 5, verse 26. 1 Chronicles 5, verse 26. This sort of is a statement in one of the genealogical listings. I think it deals with the tribe of, was it Reuben here or? It's in Matthew, yeah, the tribe of Reuben. But 1 Chronicles 5, verse 26 has sort of a summary statement. The God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, king of Assyria, and the spirit of Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria. And he carried them away. Even the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh brought them to Hala and Habor and Hara, to the river Gozan, unto this day. What's the problem grammatically with the statement? Read it in your own Bibles if you couldn't follow me. Yes. Yeah. You have a plural subject, two kings, a singular pronoun. Something's odd. Now, they couldn't understand the oddity, except to assume, well, the scribe made an error, he should have put they. He put he when he should have put they. And that was long believed to be the case. Now, how many of you have an RSV? Anybody have an RSV? No? Hmm. Anybody have a New King James V? What do you have?
In my, that is.
See how it changed? The pronoun was left as being correct, and it says Paul is Tiglath-Pileser. Now, that's not a guess by scholars. A tablet has been discovered which shows that when Tiglath-Pileser became king of Assyria, the king of Assyria conquered Babylon, he ruled Babylon under a different name. He called himself Pul. That was his royal name as far as king of Babylon. And in 2 Kings 17, he is called Pul in that chapter also. That's the only way he's called at all, I think, in that chapter. Therefore, this word and in the Hebrew, which is looks something like that, this word and is capable of meaning even, or that is to say. It certainly has been proved to have that meaning in this particular passage in 1 Chronicles. Based on archaeological evidence, it is obvious Pul is Tiglath-Pileser. Therefore, it must mean even, or that is to say, Tiglath-Pileser. Therefore, since we have the same exact word in Daniel 6:28, I'm not saying it absolutely proves it means that is to say Cyrus, but it certainly allows it to mean it. And based on the other points I've given you, it inclines me to believe that it does mean it. If it was just the scripture alone, I'd say, well, it could mean even and it could mean and. That you couldn't really say from the grammar alone. There's no pronoun there to help us. But based on these other similarities between Darius and Cyrus, and this other information, I am persuaded it does mean even. And that was the place in the book where it's tied together that the two men are the same person. Okay, we'll let you go.